This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yais Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
around 1,400 migrants were rescued in the central Mediterranean in the past 24 hours, the Italian Coast Guard has told us. At least two bodies were found during the rescue operations, which involved vessels from the Italian Coast Guard and Finance Police, as well as a vessel from the European Union Naval Mission.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. Full details coming up.
Also, the Niger Delta Avengers militants say they will begin attacks on oil facilities in the next few days. And a UN report says babies born in Yemen are dying at an alarmingly high rate.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, U.S. officials say they are trying to persuade African governments to sever ties with North Korea, arguing it is using its illegal gains to threaten the United States and the world with nuclear action. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
U.S. officials argue that every dollar, every rand, and every franc that flows into North Korea is used to further the country's internationally condemned nuclear weapons program. As tensions heat up between the United States and North Korea, Washington is trying to cut off Pyongyang's income sources any way it can. The United Nations has investigated at least seven African nations for ignoring international sanctions by trading with North Korea. The Asian nation has eight embassies in sub-Saharan Africa and has trade links to at least 11 African nations. U.S. State Department Deputy Special Representative for North Korean Policy, Mark Lambert, says the United States has a clear message to African nations and to North Korea.
We want to work with you to send two clear messages to North Korea. First, the international community is united and has spoken that it will never, ever, ever accept North Korea as a nuclear power, and that we will exert more pressure on North Korea until it returns to the table. But secondly, we want to make clear to the people of North Korea and the leaders of North Korea that there is a better future, that if North Korea, in fact, returns to negotiations, we can work with North Korea to help it develop its economy and better its people.
Officials acknowledge Africa-North Korea trade is but a small slice of the pie. China and Russia are far larger trading partners. But Sandra Udkirk, a senior counterterrorism official in the State Department's Economic Bureau, says every penny counts.
In some cases, people, whether they're government officials or outside analysts, will look at numbers and they'll say, hey, that's a really small number. But the fact of the matter is that North Korea is qualitatively and quantitatively different from any other threat that the United States faces. And there is no trade flow, there's no revenue flow that is too small or so small that it's insignificant. Everything is important.
Researcher Zachary Donenfeld, who studies North Korea-Africa relations at the Pretoria-based Institute for Security Studies, says many African nations maintain ties with North Korea because it's supported their post-independence struggles, and, because of its trade restrictions, it offers good trade deals. He also says the United States may face diplomatic difficulties in the wake of controversial, crude comments allegedly made last week by President Donald Trump about Haiti and African countries.
If the Trump administration is going to be successful in its efforts to ramp up sanctions, it will need the support of African governments. And in light of recent events and comments, it's unclear to me whether or not African governments will be exceedingly willing to give up, you know, cheap natural resources and weapons for a country that is, you know, disparaging them.
Chatham House analyst Dara Neville studies diplomatic relations between African nations and the rest of the world. He notes that pressure on African nations to drop North Korea is also coming from elsewhere, including South Korea.
They have started to re-engage with Africa. They've held a number of continental forums, the Korea-Africa Forum, the Korea-Africa Economic Forum, a number of these forums. They've begun to open more and more embassies in Africa, and they launched last year a new aid program for Africa.
VOA called the North Korean embassy in Pretoria, South Africa, seeking comment. They did not answer our calls. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
...1,400 migrants were rescued and two bodies were recovered during 11 rescue operations on the Mediterranean Sea in the past 24 hours. Rescue services report that the migrants were on 7 dinghies and 3 small boats, plus 1 large boat. In addition, one migrant was killed while riding on top of a train engine at the border of France and Italy. He was electrocuted. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with me about the latest migrant rescues and the ongoing plight of migrants as they seek a better life in Europe.
Around 1,400 migrants were rescued in the central Mediterranean in the past 24 hours, the Italian Coast Guard has told us. At least 2 bodies were found during the rescue operations, which involved vessels from the Italian Coast Guard and finance police, as well as a vessel from the European Union Naval Mission and some non-profit organisations. Now, the migrants were sailing on board 7 inflatable rubber dinghies and other vessels, and overall, 11 different operations were needed to save them. At this point, it's not clear where they will be taken, but they have been rescued.
Did they say where these migrants were coming from?
It's not clear where they're coming from. They're believed to be mostly from sub-Saharan Africa. They've come from Libya. Even though we've seen a dramatic fall in the number of arrivals by sea, we've seen just under 2,000 arrivals since the beginning of the year. It's interesting to see that some migrants are able to make this crossing, even though it's not the traditionally popular time of year during the winter months. So it's still quite a dangerous journey. And when these dinghies do collapse, it's really difficult for these people to survive because the boats actually collapse and drop into the water. And if these migrants don't know how to swim, it's incredibly dangerous.
Yes, and even if you did know how to swim, it still would be very dangerous just to be out in the open sea like that.
So you might remember, Kim, we had around 120,000 migrants and refugees arrive in Italy in 2017. That was well down on the number in 2016, where we saw 181,000 arrivals. And it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next couple of months, particularly as Italy is going into a national election in early March. So the issue of migrant arrivals will be one of the key issues in this election.
Also, I understand in another development, migrant development, there was a migrant who lost his life on the French-Italian border. Can you tell us what happened?
Yes, earlier this week, a migrant was apparently electrocuted as he was traveling on the roof of a train engine, a French train that was traveling from Italy into France. It stopped at Ventimiglia, the last town on the border on the Italian side, and his body was discovered once he arrived in France in the area of Menton. This is a terrible tragedy. It's not the first time, but it's also an indication of the numbers of people who are still gathering in Ventimiglia in that area. We've also had stories appearing recently of migrants taking to the mountains, risking life and limb through snow-covered mountains in that border region to try and make their way into France after being stopped at the French border. But this is a terrible tragedy. Not much is known about the man who died. I saw some reports say that he was believed to have come from Gambia, but that was unconfirmed. And we didn't really learn anything more about where he came from or anything about his family.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
In Kenya, members of the Sangwar community who live in the Embobat Forest, 400 kilometers from Nairobi, are facing eviction from their ancestral communal land. The government has deployed security forces to evict the community in an effort to preserve forest cover. Lenny Ruvaga reports from Eldoret.
78-year-old Thomas Chelimo is from the Sangwar community, which resides in Eldoret. Chelimo and his wife Pauline have called the Embobut Forest home all their lives. However, on January 1st, their home, together with others, was razed to the ground, allegedly by Kenya Forest Service KFS rangers, in a bid to force the Sangwar out of the forest. The forest is a critical water supply area. Chalimo says that the forced eviction by the government agency will render them homeless and landless. He says he was born and raised in the forest, as was his father and grandfather, and he says that the forest is the only place he knows as home. He says his family of children and grandchildren all ran away because of fear of eviction. Leah Toretich and her husband Abraham say that although the government initiated a compensation program about 3 years ago where resident families were given $4,000 each to relocate, genuine community members did not get any money at all. He said that they have heard the government give out compensation to community members, but he claims the majority of people have not received any money yet. The European Union is funding a $37 million six-year program to protect the ecosystem. International law expert Rosalind Amadi says the Kenyan constitution protects the rights of the Sengwer.
There is this dichotomy that if they are there, then they are destroying the environment. And I think that is what has happened, and that is the conflict that we are having. So whereas you have the right to preserve the environment for present and future generation, you also have the issue of development, and you also have the cultural rights of the people.
But Amnesty International Kenya campaign coordinator Naomi Baraza says the eviction of the minority community from their indigenous home is a violation of their fundamental right to shelter.
Kenya as a state is going against regional, international and local treaties that safeguard human rights, because the Sengwer issue, the rights of the indigenous people, rights to housing are anchored in our constitution, international law that Kenya is a treaty to, so it's purely a human rights issue, and it also affects the lives of the people.
The Kenyan government has not responded to VOA's request for comment on the evictions. But for Thomas Chalimo and others from the Sengwer community, the evictions mean an uncertain future. Lenny Rovaga for VOA News, Embobut Forest.
The Niger Delta Avengers militants say they will begin attacks on oil facilities in the next few days. On its website, the group said the attacks will be the most deadly yet. They will target international oil facilities, including the Bonga platform, the Agbami field, the EA field, the Britannia U field, and the Akpo field. The Nigerian government did not immediately comment on the threat. The group and other militant organizations launched more than a dozen attacks on oil facilities in the Niger Delta in 2016, causing production to fall sharply. The attacks, combined with low oil prices, helped Nigeria's economy slide into a recession. The number of attacks dropped last year and production picked up. The Niger Delta Avengers say they are fighting to ensure that more of the oil revenue goes to impoverished Delta communities. Nigeria is one of the world's top oil producers.
South Africa Companies and Intellectual Properties Commission is pursuing criminal complaints against three major international companies. The commission today told news organizations it's investigating SAP, a German software services company, KPMG, a Dutch audit firm, and McKinsey, a U.S. consulting firm. The firms are suspected of having acted improperly in dealing with contracts and companies linked to South Africa's Gupta family. The Guptas, one of the country's wealthiest families, are friends of President Jacob Zuma. The Guptas deny any wrongdoing. SAP has told the Reuters news agency it is cooperating with investigators. McKinsey has denied being involved in corruption, and KPMG has not commented on the matter. Also on today, South Africa's state prosecutor served a court order on McKinsey related to $130 million contract with state utility Eskom.
The United States announced yesterday that it is withholding tens of millions of dollars from the UN agency that supports Palestinian refugees and could cut millions more if reforms are not made from the UN. VOA's Margaret Bashir has more on the potential impact.
U.S. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert said the Trump administration will withhold $65 million from its initial 2018 contribution to the UN Relief and Works Agency, known as UNRWA. She said the U.S. would go ahead with a $60 million payment to avoid having a negative impact. This amount represents over half the initial tranche of $125 million the U.S. would normally have provided UNRWA at the beginning of the year. The U.S. gives about $364 million annually to UNRWA, paid in two installments, making it the agency's top donor. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres told reporters that if such cuts are made, they would have a devastating impact.
It is an important factor of stability. So if UNRWA will not be in a position to provide the vital services and the emergency forms of support that UNRWA has been providing, this will create a very, very serious problem, and we will do everything we can to avoid this situation to occur.
UNRWA provides education and health services to some 5 million Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza Strip, Syria, Lebanon, and Jordan. Relations between the Trump administration and the Palestinian Authority deteriorated after the U.S. decision last month to recognize Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and to move its embassy there. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580, and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehis Wuhib, 21 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. U.S. officials are trying to persuade African governments to sever ties with North Korea. 1,400 migrants were rescued and two bodies were recovered on the Mediterranean Sea yesterday. And the Niger Delta Avengers militants say they will begin attacks on oil facilities in the next few days. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
A report by the UN Children's Fund finds babies born in Yemen are dying at an alarmingly high rate because of the collapsing health system, lack of food and clean water. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund reports more than 3 million children have been born in Yemen since the country's civil war escalated in March 2015. The agency's report, called Born into War, describes the violent, hopeless situation of displacement, disease, poverty, and hunger into which these children are born. UNICEF says most of the estimated 3,000 babies born every day are delivered outside a health center with no skilled birth attendant present. It reports 40% of the births are premature and 30% suffer from low birth weight. Most worrying of all, it notes, is 25% of the newborns die within the first month because of infections and a variety of deprivations. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouyrak says undernutrition plays a big role in those deaths. He says around 1.8 million children are acutely malnourished and about 400,000 are severely acutely malnourished.
A child who is suffering from severe acute malnutrition is 9 times more likely to die than a child who is correctly nourished. So these children are in danger.
The report finds at least 5,000 children have been killed or maimed in the violence. That means an average of 5 children have lost their lives or been injured every day since the Saudi-led coalition began bombing Houthi rebels in support of the Yemen government nearly 3 years ago. UNICEF says more than 11 million children, nearly every child in Yemen, needs humanitarian assistance to survive. And those who do survive, it says, are likely to carry the physical and psychological scars of the brutal conflict for the rest of their lives. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We War takes its toll not only on humans, but on wildlife as well. Researchers at Princeton University investigated the consequences of 65 years of war on animal populations in Africa. The new study found that during armed conflict, the number of large animals like elephants, rhinos, and giraffes decreases. VOA's Deborah Block reports.
These endangered bonobos are protected at the world's only sanctuary for the great ape species in the Democratic Republic of the Congo. In the wild, the animals are found only in an area of the country known for its political instability and armed skirmishes. In the DRC and other African countries ravaged by war, Princeton University researchers analyzed 65 years of data about more than 250 populations of large herbivores. They found that more than 70% of the elephants, rhinos, and other plant eaters were affected by warfare, and as the number of conflicts increased, their populations declined. That happens for a variety of reasons, says Margaret Kinnaird with the conservation group Worldwide Fund International, who was not involved in the study.
You've got ordinances, you've got chemicals being used, you have weapons out there, so they can be directly aimed at wildlife. Soldiers have to live off the land, and that means they're going to be taking bushmeat. They also have to fund their warfare, and that means they're going to be going after commercially important animals and commercially important wildlife products like ivory and rhino horn.
Maintaining conservation programs in war zones and helping animals survive after a ceasefire could help save many vulnerable wildlife populations, the report says. But that's not easy.
You have to be prepared and be very ready to go in after the conflict is over. Get in there as soon as you can and begin mitigation activities is really critical.
Despite the gloomy picture, there is some hope that in post-war, the animal populations can rebound. In Mozambique's Ngorongoro National Park, for example, nearly all the wildlife disappeared during the country's 14-year-long civil war. Since fighting ended in 1992, the herds have recovered to 80% of pre-war levels. Deborah Block, VOA News.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Cornelius Tenner, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
Hello Africa, this is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
voaafrica.com.
On voaafrica.com, the news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
voaafrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.